Tonight's topic is trusting love. And what does it mean to trust love? And the first thing I want to say is that by love, I'm using sort of big picture love. You know, there's a lot of times in this society that the word love is sexualized. I'm using love in all senses. Love of self, friendship, certainly romantic love, compassion toward all people. Ultimately, I have in mind what Buddhism calls the four limitless minds, which are love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And technically, the words that we call love and compassion, metta or maitri, and then karuna. Maitri is sometimes translated as loving kindness. The connotation is that metta or maitri is the ability to share in the happiness of others and enhance the happiness of others. Whereas karuna is the ability to share in the suffering of others and to relieve the suffering of others. And I think any genuine kind of love has some elements of those. In some sense, this talk is a continuation of some of the talks in the past month or so. In particular, there was a talk a few weeks ago about the lower three chakras. There was also a talk about intimacy. Love we associate primarily with the heart and with the heart chakra. And of course, you know, this is influenced by other chakras, you know, how well can we express our love, and does my idea of love prevent me from, you know, having love, you know, all that stuff. But in many ways, our ability to bring love to others and bring love into the world depends so much on our lower chakras. You know, if I walk out into the world with an open heart, but not good boundaries and not good sense of my vitality and not very well grounded, I'm not going to have a very good experience of having an open heart. I'm going to probably draw the conclusion that it's a bad idea to have an open heart, you know? Because I really need to be solid in all those other places in order to sustain having an open heart in a balanced and healthy way. And so that's part of the idea of trusting love. Trust is really very much a first chakra quality. How much am I here? How much am I able to sink into here and occupy my place in the world? And from that place, being able to offer love. And I would say that trust has in some ways, it's kind of a catalyst for love. You know, I mean, when in any form of love, if I go into it with, I don't know about this, I don't want to get hurt here, you know, with that kind of attitude, I'm not going to have a full experience of love. To have a full experience of love, any kind of love, I have to trust it in some sense. And there's always, as it were, a kind of risk. And so it's really about exploring that in various contexts. The first kind of love I want to talk about, the primary love, is self-love. What does it mean to trust self-love? Do you trust that you are a lovable person? Do you trust that you deserve love? Just notice what comes up with these questions. Notice, you know, if it's a resounding yes inside of you or I don't know about that kind of feeling. Do you trust that your life is about love? Do you trust that you will find purpose and destiny and meaning in love? You know, again, just notice. Notice how these questions feel. One reason that self-love is challenging, and one reason that it's hard to trust self-love, is because of the experience of pain. And it's funny in a way, we're so profoundly shaped by evolution. Evolution has given us these exquisitely sensitive mammalian bodies and these exquisitely sensitive mammalian psyches. You know, all I have to do is bump my elbow and that consumes my entire awareness, you know, or, you know, someone makes a face at me or calls me a rotten name or, you know, whatever, and that consumes all my awareness. So by its very nature, pain is designed to be very loud in the psyche. And I think it's always been part of human experience, but I think it's enhanced in a very, in our very verbal culture, in our very word-focused, loud kind of culture that we have. There is this tendency, and advertising certainly likes to play in this tendency, that the more loud something is, the truer it must be, you know, that kind of thing. And so part of trusting love is trusting that even though pain is louder, love is deeper. And that's a particularly hard thing to remember in a moment of pain. Part of it is trusting that every part of us needs love. The inner critic, the places that hold shame, fear, grief, anxiety, all these uncomfortable emotions, that all of them deserve love. It's almost the paradox that the places that feel least lovable are the places that most need our love. And self-love is really, it is, in some sense, it's foundational for all other kinds of love, you know. And it's in this, I don't know if I could.
I can get it.
Oh. Bless you. You know, I love others through loving myself, and I love myself through loving others. It very much has this reciprocal relationship with my love for others. So then there's love for others, and going out into the world, and what kind of energy do we bring into the world? And so it's a whole other set of questions. How does it feel to walk out into your ordinary everyday life with an open heart? What would it be like to encounter every person you met with loving kindness and compassion? Not an easy thing to do. You know, and just as it's the paradox, the internal paradox, that the places inside us that aren't particularly lovable are the ones most in need of love, it's often the case that the people out there in the world who aren't particularly lovable need the most love. Drag a chair in. So I'm going to read you a Zen story.
Along with love of things.
Yes.
I came.
When Bankai held his seclusion weeks of meditation, pupils from all parts of Japan came to attend. During one of these gatherings, a pupil was caught stealing. The matter was reported to Bankai with the request that the culprit be expelled. Bankai ignored the case. Later, the pupil was caught in a similar act, and again Bankai disregarded the matter. This angered the other pupils, who drew up a petition asking for the dismissal of the thief, stating that otherwise they would leave in a body. When Bankai read the petition, he called everyone before him. "You are wise brothers," he told them. "You know what is right and what is not right. You may go somewhere else to study if you wish, but this poor brother does not even know right from wrong. Who will teach him if I do not? I am going to keep him here, even if all the rest of you leave." A torrent of tears cleansed the face of the brother who had stolen. All desire to steal had vanished. So, of course, things always turn out nice in Zen stories. They're not real life is not necessarily always so nice. It is very hard to remember this very simple truth. It's one of my favorite bumper stickers. Hurt people, hurt people. And so the people out there that are most gruff and most offensive and most surly and everything else are the ones who are most hurting inside, you know. And just to be able to offer, and it's not necessarily the case that if I offer loving kindness and compassion, that it's going to change anything, you know, at least that I can see on the surface. But it's almost trusting that my intention of compassion and whatever expression I can give to it will have some impact on that person. So I'll talk a little bit also about romantic love. I'm certainly not going to present myself as some kind of expert on that topic, but I'll talk about it.
Is the subject tonight love?
Trusting love.
That's what you came for. You knew it.
So there's a book
called... Is that what it's about?
There's a book called Is the Subject Tonight Love? The Subject Tonight is Love by Rumi.
Yes. Is it Rumi or Hafez? Yes. So first of all, I'll mention a few things that I mentioned a couple weeks ago. Intimacy with another is based on my ability to be intimate with myself. If I can really drop into my own tenderness, my own vulnerability, then I'm able to be with somebody else from that place. Romantic love really involves the most sensitive parts of us, the most sensitive parts of the psyche. It inevitably brings up all kinds of early childhood stuff, including, you know, things that were not ideal about our early childhood. The potential for pleasure and joy and fulfillment are far more intense than ordinary relationships, and the potential for pain and hurt and suffering are far more intense. And so it's almost like this... this magnifier of human experience. I don't think I have to twist anyone's arm to persuade you that you should trust the good parts of love. You know, like we usually don't have much problem enjoying those. It's harder to trust the parts of love that hurt. It's harder to trust the heartbreak. And really to trust that heartbreak ultimately contains the teaching. It's not a particularly pleasant teaching. It's not a particularly nice way to get the teaching. But there is a teaching there. And it's about opening us up and making us that much more vulnerable, that much more humble, that much more not knowing the answers and needing to be in dialogue with others. And I would point out that even past heartbreak, even heartbreak that, you know, we've been bitter about for decades or whatever, still holds the possibility of that teaching. So I want to share a few poems. So I have a quote sheet that is sort of heavy on poetry.
Are they love poems?
In a way. So the first one is one of the sonnets to Orpheus. by Rilke. And this requires a little bit of explanation, just to make sure you're up on the mythology. The Greek myth was that there was this guy, Orpheus, and he was the greatest musician ever. He would sing and play a lyre, and when he sang, you know, tears would stream down the faces of wild animals who would stop to listen, and the gods would stop what they were doing just to listen to his music. And so he was in love with this woman, Eurydice. And Eurydice died. And he was so distraught that he went down into the underworld and he sang for the king of the dead. And the king of the dead was moved. So the king of the dead makes this deal with him and says, all right, I'll let Eurydice return to the land of the living. As you walk back up, she can walk behind you. But on that long walk, you're not allowed to turn around and look at her. And of course, you could see where this is going. He gets almost all the way, and then he turns around and looks, and Eurydice vanishes. And so he loses her twice, essentially. And so Rilke's sonnets, the sonnets to Orpheus, are in many ways an exploration of the relationship of love and loss. And so this is one of the more famous ones. Be ahead of all parting, as if it had already happened, like winter, which is even now in passing. For beneath the winter is a winter so endless that to survive it at all is a triumph of the heart. Be forever dead in Eurydice, and climb back singing, climb praising as you return to connection. Here among the disappearing in the realm of the transient, be a ringing glass that shatters as it rings. Be, and know as well the need not to be. Let that ground of all that changes bring you to completion now. To all that has run its course and to the vast unsayable number of beings abounding in nature, add yourself gladly and cancel the cost. So not necessarily the easiest poem to understand, but a poem of tremendous courage and tremendous trusting of love. And really, in many ways, you might say that, you know, the king of the dead, when he was issuing that challenge, you know, which sounds, you know, in a way, it's sort of an impossible challenge, but at the same time, it was a challenge of profound trust, a profound trusting of love. Second poem by E.E. Cummings. Being to timelessness as it's to time, love did no more begin than love will end. Where nothing is to breathe, to stroll, to swim, love is the air, the ocean, and the land. Do lovers suffer? All divinities, proudly descending, put on deathful flesh. Are lovers glad? Only their smallest joys, a universe emerging from a wish. Love is the voice under all silences, the hope which has no opposite in fear, the strength so strong mere force is feebleness, the truth more first than sun, more last than star. Do lovers love? Why then to heaven with hell? Whatever sages say and fools, all's well. Again, a poem of tremendous courage and tremendous, you know, heart-opening, trusting love. And then a touching one. This is a relatively recent poem by David White from his newest book. Much has been said about the eternal and untouchable nature of love, its tidal, ungovernable forces, and its emergence from far beyond the ordinary. But love may find its fullest, its most imagined and most courageous form, when it leaves the abstractions and safety of the timeless and the untrammeled to make its promises amid the fears, vulnerabilities, and disappearances of our difficult touchable, and time-bound world. To love and to witness love in the face of possible loss, and to find the mystery of love's promise in the shadow of that loss, in the shadow of the ordinary, and in the shadow of our own inevitable disappearance, may be where the eternal source of all our origins stands in awe of the full consequence of everything it has set in motion. And then just a couple quotes I found from Lao Tzu, and this is actually from the Tao Te Ching. He who does not trust enough will not be trusted. Very, very simple. Ernest Hemingway tells us the best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them. Very simple. Mother Teresa says, I found the paradox that if you love until it hurts, there can be no more hurt and only more love. And I don't know too much about this person, Nisanada Netta. It's a living person. Just open your heart and give. Trust in the goodness of man and allow yourself to be overwhelmed. And then this anonymous quote, there's nothing more beautiful than a person whose heart has been broken, but who still believes in love.